This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
It's another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Papp joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, beware of this record-setting spider in Australia. Plus, a couple of experiments take to the skies for NASA and the U.S. military. And this week in history, an anniversary for Reggie's namesake. Coming up on Cool Stuff Ride Home.
NASA and the military have a couple experiments in the air at the moment, and I mean that literally. Starting off with the X-59 supersonic plane, which will be tested on January 12th, NASA's groundbreaking supersonic experimental plane, pivotal to the Quest mission, is set to emerge from its California desert warehouse next week. The X-59 has been in development for 6 years and will showcase supersonic flight without the disruptive sonic booms. Measuring 99 feet in length and standing only 14 feet tall, the needle-like appearance of the single engine will have a cruise altitude of 55,000 feet and reaching speeds as high as 925 miles per hour or Mach 1.4. The X-59 is designed to generate perceived sound of only 75 PLDB or perceived level decibels. If you're curious what are perceived level decibels, they are a new metric that has emerged that shows perceived loudness. So it takes into account the frequency content, rise time. The PLDB is a measure of what people actually hear. The X-59, according to Lockheed Martin from Skunk Works, who helped design the plane, they describe that sound as about as loud as a closing car door. So what makes this plane so quiet? Well, per CNET, any variation in shape on the body of the plane, like the cockpit jutting up in front or the tail sticking out of the back of the plane, can produce a shockwave. To minimize the shockwaves that travel to the ground, you just need to change the shape of the plane and make it far more streamlined, smoothing out the variations in shape and spreading them across a much larger body. According to Larry Cleat, NASA's acoustic testing technical lead for the X-59, all those features combined to make sure the shockwaves being produced midair are well-behaved. Quote, "We want to keep shockwaves parallel and separated from each other so they don't combine into a loud sonic boom." He added, "So we're dragging out those volume changes, making them very gradual across the entire body of the airplane," end quote. As for sonic booms, they typically result in objects exceeding the speed of the sound, creating, you know, those ground level disturbances. However, if you are in the aircraft, you won't hear the boom because you're traveling at that speed. The sonic boom waves can wreak havoc on buildings, disturb animals, and inconvenience anyone with an earshot. NASA's aim with the X-59 is to showcase supersonic flight with the muted boom, referred to as a sonic thump. Originally slated for 2023 for the debut, delays have occurred due to system integration, computer glitches, structural testing, and ground tests, according to NASA, so it'll finally take flight here in 2024. Despite X-59's research craft being a bright mint green, the upcoming test flight will showcase a red, white, and blue color scheme on the aircraft, serving both aesthetic and protective purposes. The updated paint should protect the plane from moisture and corrosion. NASA invites enthusiasts to join the rollout celebration. They're going to broadcast the event at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, January 12th. Now, a little history on some supersonic flights there. 2003, the Concorde, a supersonic commercial jet, made its final flight. That jet version of a supersonic plane did have a fatal crash in 2000 that ended up killing 113 people. And since it created loud sonic booms, that jet was only allowed to travel at those high speeds over the ocean. Right now, all commercial jets fly slower than sound. The X-59 will be rolled out in several phases. The first flight will be phase one. For phase two, the performance of the supersonic flight will be tested. The third and final phase will take place in 2026, and that'll involve the jet flying over several U.S. cities, which will test that PLDB levels on the residents. The goal is to wrap up all three phases by 2027. Currently, the FAA doesn't allow civil aircraft to exceed Mach 1. As previously mentioned, this craft will hit Mach 1.4. NASA plans on sharing the data collected with the FAA, which could lead to changes in that rule.
Okay, Reg, two things that came to mind with this. First and foremost, when you were introducing the fact that this test plane would emerge from the California desert, my mind immediately went to the Top Gun sequel. I mean, was this based on reality? What Tom Cruise was flying around there in the opening scenes?
I believe Tom Cruise hit Mach 10 in that. So
I think you're
I don't
right.
think
you're, I think you're right.
I don't think we're hitting yet.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That part, you're right. When you say that, that reminded me of that. But still, feels like there's some similarities. And the other thing is this a civilian aircraft? Is that what we're talking about? Like, this could replace planes that are currently taking people like you and I from city to city? Or is this for military usage specifically?
Right now, I don't think they have a specific, I guess, announcement on one way or the other which way it's going to go. Because it's not a military craft, it has to follow those civilian rules of not going past Mach 1.0. Military aircrafts, of course, can exceed that. But because this isn't being used for military purposes at the moment, it won't be able to. And, you know, looking at the shape and design of this, I don't know what they would need to do to make it a commercial airline. It would have to be an extremely long, sleek plane.
Sure.
In order to do that, in order to get more than, you know, one person in the cockpit. Either way, I'm curious to hear that sonic thump.
Yeah, that's an interesting term they've coined there for that one. Not quite as intimidating when it's just a thump and not a boom.
Well, yeah, it's not that boom. It's a thump. The other military craft out there that just launched is the X-37B space plane. They're really imaginative with the names, by the way. Throwing an X in number. Its latest mission started yesterday. The spacecraft will spend the next few years in space. Similar to its predecessors, the reusable aircraft resembling a compact space shuttle transported undisclosed experiments, all while operating without any human occupants on board. The space plane took off from SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket at NASA's Kennedy Space Center. Takeoff for the craft was delayed more than 2 weeks due to mechanical issues. It is the seventh flight of the X-37B. The craft has already logged more than 10 years in orbit since its debut in 2010. The most recent mission, its lengthiest to date, spanned 2.5 years before landing on Kennedy Space Center runway a year ago. Authorities from Space Force refrained from disclosing the duration of the current orbital test or the specific payload, except for a NASA experiment targeting the assessment of radiation effects on materials. The X-37B was built by Boeing and bears a resemblance to NASA's retired space shuttles at about a quarter of the size, measuring only 29 feet in length. No astronauts are required, as the X-37B is equipped with an autonomous landing system. These space planes execute vertical takeoffs akin to rockets, but land horizontally like planes. Their operational range is designed for orbiting at altitudes ranging from 150 miles to 500 miles. Two X-37Bs are also stationed in a former shuttle hangar at Kennedy. I like the idea of a mini spacecraft, by the way, Marcus. It kind of amuses me.
Yeah, well, it certainly gets you thinking about what the future will look like with space travel, as we talk about so often on this show. But, you know, at some point, we may all be cruising around up in space in something similar to cars, vehicles for families, for individuals. So when you talk about a tiny spacecraft, yeah, I imagine at some point, like everything else in this world, things get smaller and smaller as the technology progresses, which is, again, it's just a fascinating thing to think about and the possibilities of where this may end up.
I do wonder if we'll ever figure out what was in the payload besides that NASA experiment, or is that going to all be classified information?
I don't think they have any reason to tell us, so unless people start to make a big deal about it and bang down the door for answers, I'm going to guess this one will remain under wraps, much like a lot of things that have transpired over the years involving space and potentially individuals arriving from space here on Earth. Now, for those of you afraid of spiders, be thankful you've never run into this monstrosity. In Australia, the largest known male specimen of the world's most venomous spider has been collected. The deadly Sydney funnel web spider, dubbed Hercules, was found on the central coast, about 50 miles north of Sydney, but has since found a new home at the Australian Reptile Park, where he'll help save lives. More on that in a moment. Hercules measures 7.9 centimeters, or 3.1 inches, from foot to foot, surpassing the park's previous record holder, found in 2018, a male funnel web named Colossus. Per Sky News, Sydney funnel web spiders have powerful fangs that can pierce a human fingernail and typically range in length from 1 to 5 centimeters, with females generally being larger than males, but not as deadly. They're predominantly found in forested areas and suburban gardens from Sydney to the coastal city of Newcastle in the north and the Blue Mountains to the west. So if you despise spiders, you might be asking yourself, why would they want to keep this guy around, especially given his poisonous nature? Well, safely captured spiders handed in by the public, which is what happened here, undergo quote-unquote milking to extract venom, which is essential for producing life-saving anti-venom. Emma Tanai is a spider keeper at Australian Reptile Park and said, quote, "We're used to having pretty big funnel web spiders donated to the park. However, receiving a male funnel web this big is like hitting the jackpot. Whilst female funnel web spiders are venomous, males have proven to be more lethal. With having a male funnel web this size in our collection, his venom output could be enormous, proving incredibly valuable for the park's venom program," end quote. Clearly, this program is working too, because since it debuted in 1981, there have been zero, that's right, no fatalities in Australia from funnel web spider bites. Reggie, are you afraid of spiders?
I'm not afraid of spiders. In fact, I opened up my computer screen after Christmas break and there was a one hanging, just making a little web next to my computer screen because I wasn't paying attention to it.
But how often are you on your computer? This is...
It was over Christmas break. It decided to make some time and make use of my lack of use, I guess. Although the more I read about Australia, as much as I would like to visit Australia, I don't know. Some of the animals there make me just want to stay away.
Yeah, I get it. There's some deadly stuff out there in the outback. There's no doubt about that.
And as for the collecting the venom, there's actually a place not too far from where I live. They do that. You can go there and watch them collect venom from spiders and snakes and other stuff. They have a little window. You can see it. And then they'll bring some of them out for you to see if, you know, they're not too dangerous.
Now, you're in Wisconsin. I'm just curious. Obviously, I grew up there as well. What are the real poisonous spiders that are running around there?
It's more just not just for Wisconsin. They ship all of the animals there. They collect the venom and then they ship it out to where it needs to go.
Okay. Okay. I was going to say, I know here in Nevada, there's quite a few black widow spiders out there.
We have the brown recluse, I believe is what it's called. That's a pretty venomous spider.
Yep. Definitely heard of that one. Good. Never encountered it in person, thank God.
They do have, you know, tarantulas there and a bunch of different snakes and a lot of different animals just to collect venom from. Taking a look at this day in history, I mainly grabbed this one because it has to do with my namesake. On January 5th, 1993, Reggie Jackson, or Mr. October, was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. When he was inducted, he decided to wear a Yankees cap for his Hall of Fame plaque after the Oakland Athletics fired him from a coaching position in 1991. The Yankees did retire his number, 44, on August 14th of 1993. Jackson played 21 seasons in the MLB for the Athletics, Orioles, Yankees, and Angels. He earned the nickname Mr. October due to his clutch hitting in the playoffs when he was with the Athletics and Yankees. He was part of the Athletics team that won 5 consecutive AL West titles, 3 straight American League pennants, and 3 consecutive World Series titles from 1972 to 1974. With the Yankees, he was with them when they won the American League East Division 4 times, 3 American League pennants, and back-to-back World Series titles in 77 and 78. In fact, in the 77 World Series, Jackson hit 3 consecutive home runs in Game 6, clinching the title for the Yankees. For his career, he hit 563 home runs and was the AL All-Star for 14 seasons. He also won 2 Silver Slugger Awards, the AL Most Valuable Player Award in 73, 2 World Series MVP Awards, and the Babe Ruth Award in 77. And most importantly, when it comes to his stats, when my parents couldn't come up with the name for me when I was born in October, they finally settled on Reggie because my dad was a Reggie Jackson fan. I mean, that's the most important thing to come from him. The hospital actually told my parents, "You have to name me. It is time to leave."
Can't we just call him Boy for a few more weeks until we figure this out?
My dad wanted kids with all our names, and he couldn't come up with one. And like I said, and I'm Reggie, not Reginald, because, you know, it was Reggie Jackson. It wasn't Reginald Jackson.
Right.
So I am a Reggie.
Now, why did your dad want kids with all R names?
He has an R, and he's weird. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, if I remember correctly, you were named after a sports figure as well, weren't you?
I was, yeah. Marcus Johnson played basketball at UCLA and then later for the Milwaukee Bucks for a number of years and is now their color commentator on television broadcasts. That is my namesake, and that's the reason I spell it with a Q-U instead of a C, like a lot of others. Which also results in me getting every possible name under the sun when I visit the doctor's office or the dentist and people don't know me and they look at that name. It's kind of amusing at times. You know, people want to address you by name, so they look down at a sheet of paper to see, okay, who is this person? And they obviously don't know how to say it. Their face crinkles up and then, ah, oh, nice to meet you, Marquise. Yeah, not quite, but it's all good. I've learned to live with all of the, with all variations at this point.
I hear a lot of people calling you Marquise, so.
Gotten Marquise, Marquez, a lot of things. And like I said, I get it. It's a tough spelling and you just never know some days.
You know, just to clarify, Reginald Jackson is a Reginald. They only referred to him as Reggie, and that's all my dad wanted was just the Reggie part.
So. Okay.
Although as I got older, he has started calling me Reginald every now and then, but.
Only when you're bad?
I think it's as we mature more, it's just a more, you know, dignified sounding name, Reginald.
Yeah. You sound like you should be getting tea with the queen or something as Reginald.
That's right. Sir Reginald, your tea is ready. That'll do it for this edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Reginald Rizzou. He's Marquise Path. Or Reggie and Marcus, however you want to go with. Feel free to shoot us an email at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com with any thoughts, questions, comments that you may have for the show. We'll talk again on Monday. Thanks for joining us.